Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
At Lowe's, this Veterans Day and every day, verified military members, veterans, and their spouses get automatic silver status in MyLowe's Rewards with free standard shipping, plus 10% off eligible purchases with no annual limit. It's one way we honor and give back to those who have served and still do. Learn more now at Lowe's.com/military. 10% discount can't be combined with another offer. Exclusions, terms, and conditions apply. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at Lowe's.com/terms. Subject to change.
Let's bring in Lisa Dugan, Department of Natural Resources. She works with safety and recreation. It's a title so long that, I told Steve Carroll, I said, Lisa, you couldn't even put that name on the back of your softball uniform. You've got such a prestigious title. It's long and lengthy, but we know what it means.
You know, it explains the job, but it certainly doesn't explain all of it. So we can just go with, you know, I talk about safety, ice safety, boating safety, snowmobile safety, all that good stuff. Ways that we can have fun outside and be safe.
And boy, do we need to talk about it right now, huh? I mean, we got this storm coming in, and the storm's got rain and sleet and everything that and wind and everything else coming up. We got people up north that are probably safe to ice fish and everything in between. So let's start with that, Lisa. What prompted my curiosity in this was I was driving the other day and I saw a lake that had frozen over 3 days previous, and I see a guy in the middle of the lake ice fishing, and I'm going, that's crazy. There can't be enough ice there. And it just got me thinking, what are the rules? How do you begin to forecast what's safe and what's not? So you pick it up there and take it away.
Yeah, well, and I know, you know, we say it every time and we've heard it, ice is never 100% safe. And, you know, with that being said, you know, there's steps that you can take to, you know, put yourself in the best position when you do go out on the ice. So then if something does happen, you know, how can you get yourself out? How can you help somebody else out? And, you know, how can you best prepare for those unexpected, situations? Nobody plans for falling through the ice. So, you know, we're still going to ice fish. We're still going to ski and ice skate and do all of those things on the ice. But, you know, this has been a really strange start to the season. Like you said, conditions are changing so quickly, and it just hasn't been a great start to the ice season. So, you know, it's one of those things that we need to keep an eye on the temperature, not necessarily the date on the calendar at this time.
So somebody says, you know what, I'm thinking about going ice skating on this pond back here because the pond freezes quicker than the big lakes are. There's not as much open water here, and I can eyeball it and see it looks like it's pretty safe. That's a thought. I get that. But how do you know whether it's safe enough or not? What process do you go through to get there?
Yeah. And you hit that on the head. You can't judge the ice conditions just by the appearance because there's so many factors that go into how ice is formed, the size of the body of water, like you said, if there's any currents or streams coming in, there's so much to take into consideration, before stepping foot on it. But, you know, the only way to really check is to actually measure the ice for yourself. Don't take people's word for it. Don't take someone else's word for it. Check for yourself because really your safety is your responsibility. So, you know, if you have, you know, an ice auger, you're going out fishing, you're going to have an auger with you anyway. This time of year, you can carry out, an ice chisel or spud bar and kind of check the ice as you go. Or, you know, people have used a handheld drill to check it, like if you're going to go ice skating. And, you know, for this time of the year, it's important to You want to look for that new clear ice, because that's the, you know, most solid ice. And now we're going to have snow cover on top. We're going to have rain that's deteriorating the conditions. So you can't measure the snow. Don't measure bad ice. You want to look for that good solid ice that hopefully at some point we'll start to see, and get some, you know, longer consistent days of below freezing temperatures to get that nice solid ice that's really good for getting out on.
Lisa Dugan is our guest from the Department of Natural Resources. Now, you and I are talking, I think, about mainly metro and southern Minnesota. How does it look in the northern part? I just talked to somebody who had their house out on Red Lake and had a great time out ice fishing there.
Yeah, I mean, conditions vary across the state so much because they, you know, I've seen the same thing too, and I've heard that people are getting out and ice fishing. Some of the larger lakes, they may not be completely frozen in yet. I think, like in the Brainerd area, they're starting to, you know, call in their ice in date. So they are starting to see the bigger lakes freeze in. And, you know, where you might have enough ice to support, you know, from what I've heard, and again, check for yourself when you get up there, but, you know, that they're able to start bringing some of the ice houses out with a side-by-side. They're not allowing bigger trucks on the lakes yet. So again, check before you go up so you know exactly, you know, what you're getting into. And once you're out there, like, check with the local experts. So if there's known hazards, if you're not super familiar with the body of water you're going out on, check to see if there's an area that typically stays open longer, if there's aeration systems. And, you know, don't head out for the first time at night. You know, make sure you have some daylight so you know where you're going and you can see anything that, you know, comes up in front of you if you are going out. And again, you know, some of the larger lakes that haven't frozen in yet, what we've seen the last couple of years, and it sounded like we're getting some wind, is that, you know, those bays will kind of freeze in earlier. And then if we get a storm coming in and the wind shifts, it can, you know, those ice shelves can, you know, detach from shore. And then we have anglers that are are stranded on a floating ice shelf.
Every once in a while you'll see that. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's, you know, I wouldn't want to be in that situation, but it could be perfectly good ice that they go out on. It's just a shift in the wind, so keep an eye on that when you're out there too.
What does wind do to ice conditions? I know it's adjacent to a puddle. It depends on the open water that's there, but what will it do? You know, especially when we talk about drastic winds like tomorrow.
Yeah, well, and if we're getting rain and wind, what the wind can do is kind of, you know, it moves that open water and, you know, it can either create holes on the ice that open up. It can shift the ice shelves and move the ice shelves around. So if you've had, you know, you're looking out your window or you've seen, you know, ice along the shoreline and the middle of the lake is open, it can move those ice shelves around. And it really, it just moves any of the water that's on top of the ice. So it deteriorates it then from the top down. And also, you know, with the snow acts as really an insulating blanket on the ice. So it's going to take longer for, you know, the ice to start forming, and it adds to the weight, you know, that the ice can really hold. So a couple things you have to take into consideration when you're going out on a, you know, a lake or a river that has snow on top of it, too.
Now we talk about this, checking that, but I guess I don't know. Is there a minimum in terms of to support one person that's going to go ice skating or walk on? I mean, how thick does that ice have to be for one person, and how thick does it have to be before you put a fish house on it?
Mm-hmm. Yep, so you want to see at least 4 inches of clear, solid ice to you know, to walk out on if you're going ice skating, or, you know, if you're carrying your sled with your fishing gear in it, you want to look for at least 4 inches of clear, solid ice before going out. And then if you're taking a snowmobile or an ATV out, 5 to 7 inches for that, and especially take into consideration the side-by-sides. You know, they're really popular. People are loving them, taking them out on the ice, but you know, they're heavier than a snowmobile, and especially if you're able to bring all your gear out, your fish house out, take into consideration all of the weight of your gear and equipment before going out, too. We've seen kind of a troubling trend the last few years where nearly all of the fatalities have involved either a snowmobile or an ATV, and the side-by-sides are definitely, you know, in the higher range of that, too.
So last question. One of the things that's always scared me, and that's why I stay away from them, and right now there probably wouldn't be any question because it's probably pure open water, but rivers always scare me, and they scare me even more in the winter. What is it we need to know about rivers? Because I don't even like them in the summer because I don't know where the currents are.
Yeah, I mean, you're right, though. They're pretty unpredictable, and you'll see that they usually freeze later than the lakes. And you have to remember it's moving water, and it's going to take a lot longer for that to freeze. And again, you add in a lot of additional factors when you're talking about moving water and vegetation. You know, if there's areas along the river where there's a lot of vegetation, that'll typically stay open longer as well. So it's a lot more it's unpredictable. So it kind of raises the danger factors, I would say. So I would say with that, there should be more safety precautions. So make sure you're checking the ice if you are out on a river, as you go. I would just check it as you go. And, some pieces of safety equipment that you can bring with you, are kind of things that people already have. Bring, ice picks with you, put them around your neck. That's, how they're made to be carried. You want them easily accessible. Should you fall through, they can help pull yourself out of the ice. And also look into getting like a float coat or buoyant.
I was going to say, would you just wear a life jacket? Would that be okay?
Yeah, absolutely. And, people think that's kind of a nuts thing to do. It's not the first thing that you think of. It's with all your summer gear. But, not only will it keep you warm, it might add a little bit of bulk, but it's going to be the one piece of equipment that really keeps your head above water and buys you some time before, emergency personnel can come out or you can get yourself out of the water. So wear some buoyant gear, wear a life jacket, and, take those ice picks out with you.
Lisa, appreciate it very much, and I hope people heed your advice here over the next couple of days as this storm comes in. And it doesn't look like it's going to be, real safe in a lot of places for any time soon.
And thank you for getting the safety message out. That's always great too. Have fun out there and just plan for the unexpected, I guess.
Yeah, and safety first. And I always say, if I'm going to go on the ice this time of year, I'm going to make sure the deepest part I go to is thigh deep, because I can get out of that, but I can't get out of it when it's 8 feet,
There you go. That's good advice.
Thank you, Lisa.
Take care. Thanks so much.
Yeah, I've learned the hard way more than once. I'll explain when we come back. Sports to the Max. Here we go.
Right of all the reindeers, you know you're the man for mine.
Run, Rudolph, can you bring me a light beer?
Welcome back. Run, Rudolph, Santa's got to make it to town.
Sports to the Max. I've had so many near misses, in part because I spent so much time on water in my life and lived near water for most of my life, that I've just had... I've had so many close calls, and I guess, I don't know if you call it life threatening or not, but if you're on the lake a lot, and you do a lot in the wintertime on the lake, you got to be so careful because things just happen. I recall not that many years ago, I was walking on a lake and I was near shore, and all of a sudden I just went in. The ice just gave way. And it was about thigh deep. It wasn't intimidating. It wasn't like you go, oh, my God, I can't breathe. Or it's over your head, anything like that. And I realized that I was coming in, and there was a drainage that was a street drainage. So in other words, overruns from the street or the storm sewer made its way to the lake. And because of that, you had compromised ice, but you wouldn't know it. Until you got too close and it was too late. And I thought to myself, I remember thinking to myself, I thought, I can get out of this and it's okay, no harm done. But what about a snowmobile? Because you bury that thing there and you're going to have a tough time getting it out. And there's no way that you could tell it was just kaplump. I was in the drink. And it takes you a second to realize what just happened. When I was a kid growing up on the shores of Lake Titlow, I vaguely remember it. Other people in my family recount it because they were much older than I, with much more clarity. But we were walking down the shoreline, and probably this time of year, whenever it froze over. Usually it would freeze over around November 10th, right around then. And usually by about Thanksgiving, Lake Titlow was good to go. You could go out and walk around the lake. Not every year. It varies. Just like this year is different than last year. But that's what that's what I remember. And I was probably about 5 years old. See, we didn't have that many constraints or rules where I grew up. We grew up on a lake, and so did the neighbors. And I don't even want to tell you, you know, when I started driving a boat and carrying a gun to a duck blind by myself, all that stuff. But anyway, my brother and I were walking down the shoreline, and there was ice. And I don't know why I ventured out, but I did. And I went through, and I was all of, like, say, 5 years old. And it I don't recall it being over my head, but I do recall it being a threatening situation. And my brother yelling for help. And we lived right by Maynard Nesvik. And Maynard knew how to get things done. Maynard had the implement dealership there in town. And there are certain people, they just know how to get things done. And Maynard was one of those guys, you know. He had... he lived that kind of life. He was a handyman. You know, you got a farm implement. You probably know a few things, a few tricks of the trade as to how to get, you know, in and out of fields and everything else with tractors and combines. And so Maynard came out in his backyard and with a rope, and he literally lassoed me. He tied the rope in a lasso. And I don't know if he had had some experience in the rodeo or anything like that, or if it was just a feel that he had, but he knew apparently that he couldn't walk to me. Because the ice wasn't forgiving, and he knew there was a way to get this, and he did, and he lassoed me, and literally, I don't know if he then if I slid on the top of the ice or what happened. I just remember coming home, and being cold, and my parents being thankful that it had turned out the way that it did. But obviously some room for concern. And again, I don't remember it being over my head. I just remember that Maynard came out and used the lasso. And I've been told the story so many times that I probably remember it because of that. But those are, you know, what always strikes you is how quickly it can happen. I was out hunting ducks just this last month in North Dakota. And there was some ice in some places, not a lot. And we were, but it was that cold. The temperatures were that cold, which means the water temperatures were probably in the 40s. And we, Joe Berglove and Mike Maroney and I, and they were in one boat, and I was in another, and I was in a smaller boat. And it was tucked away in the weeds, and we're waiting, and, you know, here come the ducks. And I stand up to shoot, and I pop, and I bring a Drake Mallard down. No big surprise there, right? It was a great shot. No big surprise there, as I tell Ron Shera. And the next thing I knew, I'd flipped out of the boat, and half my body was in the water, and my my elbow was only like 2 feet deep, the water where we were, but my elbow was like basing was creating a brace at the bottom of foundation, up against the what was a mud bottom. And I couldn't, it's hard to, you almost have to see this to get a vision on it. But the only way I could get out of this predicament was to roll into the water, because my body was in the boat, and I couldn't, because of the weight distribution, I couldn't bring myself back into the boat. So the only way I could do it was to get out of the boat, which meant rolling over into the water, which would have filled my waders, soaked me on a cold day like that. Now, fortunately, I was with two other hunters. I said, come get, and they came over, and boom, we fixed it rather quickly. But what dawned on me was two things. One was, what if I'd have been alone? I could have got out of it, but I'd have been very cold, and my waders would have been filled, and had a long way to go back to the shore, and I could have navigated that. I don't think that would have been, again, life-threatening, but dangerous. And then the other part was, what if I'd have been by myself, and the water was a lot deeper than that? And I went in, and I went in my waders. Or I flipped the boat, or whatever. But it happens so doggone quick, folks, that it just a boom. And these things. That's why I have so much respect and albeit fear for the water, and especially when there's an ice over, because I've just seen these things happen. And you know, I don't even know how people can snowmobile at night, and I know a lot of people like to, but I just go, man, there just seems like that risk is so high. You know, I spent 2.5 hours one time in a slough that I couldn't get out of because the cattails were so high that I lost my direction. And those are scary times. Another time I got fogged in, and I walked back to my truck, and I got within 20 yards of my truck, never knew it, and I turned left or right when I should have just kept going straight. And, you know, 2.5 hours later, a farmer found me out on a back road. And again, not life-threatening because I was on land. But as we retraced my steps, I realized because of a couple of landmarks that I had walked probably within 20 yards of my vehicle, but because of the fog, didn't see it. And the next thing you know, I'd gone the wrong direction, and he found me, and we found my truck. But holy mackerel, that gets your attention. And I just get scared to dickens this time of year when I see lakes. And I saw this guy out in the middle of the lake the other day. And you're going, I don't even know. If I saw him fall through, I don't even know what you could do. Because how close would you try to get to somebody that's already on vulnerable ice? I think the only thing you can do is call somebody and see what they can do. But I'm playing in my mind like, okay, could you throw him a rope? Could you slide a boat out there and run with the boat as fast as you could? And then if the ice started to break, you jump in the boat and you get as close to him as you can. I don't know. But all those things play in my mind, and then it just keeps coming back to the same thing. That's not worth it. It's not worth it to go ice fishing in the middle of the lake on 2-inch ice. But some people do, and maybe there's, I don't know, maybe they're smarter than me, but I can't imagine a fishing trip to catch a couple of crappies or sunfish that would be worth that. Tomorrow is signing day. That means that it's a whole new ball game now in college football. You sign these players that are seniors in high school, but you also want this transfer portal, and then there's another signing day in February, so it gets very confusing. But tomorrow, say the Gophers will sign a class, most of their senior class, of football players. It'll be freshmen next year at the University of Minnesota. But you got to be careful because you don't want to sign too many because there might be somebody in the transfer portal that you want even more. See how this game is being played now and how confusing it gets? Randy Taylor used to coach college football and now works for a recruiting service like that. We'll ask him to sort it out and see what he thinks of the Golden Gophers class. That's next on Sports to the Max.
You're a mean one, Mr. Grinch. You really are a heel.
That's Mother Nature today, Mr. Grinch. Welcome back. Sports to the Max. Randy Taylor used to coach the University of Minnesota. And he now helps oversee a recruiting service. That means they look at who's going where on signing day and beyond. And there's so many different, there's two signing days, one in December, one in February, and then anytime in between you can get commitments, of course. And Randy, I got to tell you, this college football, for better or worse, and maybe it's for better, I don't know, has been turned upside down over in basketball and everything else because of this transfer portal and extra years. But we have never seen the Wild Wild West like we've seen it here in the last year, have we?
No, and then you throw in the NIL.
And then you throw in the NIL. Yeah, everybody's looking for deals, right?
Yeah, so I'm at school Y, and I want to go to school X, but I'm only getting sandwiches at school Y. Maybe I'll get 3 meals at school X. I'm going, baby.
I'm going, man, and I'll compete for whatever job it is they want me to compete for there. How has the NIL, what schools have benefited the most from the NIL that you can tell?
Well, I think the obvious are, you know, I think Alabama has the Bryce Young kid is, before he ever took a snap, had $1 million in NIL deals. And so I think I haven't really looked at who is doing what, but I'm assuming the best, you know, the elite programs are doing the best.
You know, and what this has settled into for most, you know, a lot of people thought this would be a windfall, and then reality sets in. Businesses aren't going to just give you money. There has to be a reason. Either they're a huge donor and they just want to win, or you have to make money for them, and that's why they're investing in you. So it sounds like, Randy, most of the people that are making NIL money, it's as being an influencer on a social media. So if you can get enough followers and then say, I use this product, you can make some money, but it's almost contingency money based on, or consignment money based on what you do for them, for most players. Only the high profile, it seems like, because you got to be able to move merchandise for that company, are really benefiting right now.
Well, I don't know about that, because here's what I think. Just think about this. BYU has NIL arrangements for everybody, including walk-ons. And so everybody is benefiting. You know, there's offensive linemen who are getting free meals, you know what mm-hmm. I mean, or whatever it might be. So everybody's benefiting right now, and recruiting is based on what NIL money might be out there in part. I mean, you know, like the Rattler kid, he had an agent handling his
transfer
NIL deals.
So he's looking, he moved from Alabama to South Carolina. From Oklahoma, I'm sorry, South Carolina. And he is a coveted, you know, he's got tape, as they say. So he's proved himself. He just lost a starting spot. And so now his agent can talk to that school, in this case South Carolina, and say, okay, what are we looking at for NIL here? And that's all legit now, is what you're saying.
I don't know if that's legit to do that, but I know that it can be done. So I haven't read the rules enough to know if an agent can be working with. I don't think you can sell a kid to a school based on the NIL money he can get, but I think you can get NIL money from, Target or something.
Sure. And what an agent probably could do is he could say, if you want to go to that school, let me make some phone calls to some corporations there, and let's just test the waters and see what they think.
Yeah, and then under the table is a whole different world.
That's a whole different world.
Yeah.
Okay. So tomorrow's signing day, and it's different now because of the December and February. It used to be the big build-up to February and all the kids with their different hats, and then they'd make the call and all that stuff. It's changed a little bit since then. First of all, how significant is tomorrow?
Well, it's significant in that it's still early signing, and you know, but I don't know if it's as important as it was last year. And some of that has to do with the NIL and the transfer portal and all the other things. So there's a lot of talk about let's move the early signing day back either to February or some other time to kind of guard against all of these transfers killing us in our scholarship numbers. Because, you know, kids can decide to transfer after you've signed a class of you know, Minnesota's got 19 commits, but by the time all the kids decide to transfer, you may need 25, and you're going to get what's left over in February.
And is it also a case of some of these kids, let's say the semester ends at the end of December, you could be a veteran player sitting there going, I'm going to see who actually commits here in this signing class, and if I think they're going to put that person in front of me, I'm not saying a word here, but come January, I'm out of here. I mean, is that the game that's being played?
That's exactly right. That's what the fear is that they're going to just be sitting and once they sign that elite quarterback, you know, I'm out of here, man, or that whatever it might be, you know. And so these kids are sitting here watching the signings and the transfers to see if they're going to stay. And so, you know, you go to like 24/7 Sports and they've got their transfer portal section of who's left and who's going and all that. Now, again, I don't know if they're up to date because I just looked. So earlier today I checked the portal, and there were like 32 that had signed up today. That
okay.
was at 2:26. At 5:13:49, it signed up portal today. So that's 49 in one day. There, right now, active players in this recruiting class, there's 2,064 Division I players in the portal
that are looking for it to upgrade themselves, in essence.
Yeah.
Okay. So,
yeah.
So if you were a coach, knowing what you know and the coaches that you know, particularly in a Power Five conference, all these other colleges just become junior colleges to you. It seems to me. Would you go heavy on the transfer portal and less on the high school? Or, I mean, it seems to me that if you know how to navigate a transfer portal and you can get them right now, and you know how to identify talent, you're much better off going with somebody that's played 2 or 3 years and you got tape on it at the college level.
Well, the colleges now have a portal division. You know, like a, it's almost like you have the pro scouting and college scouting. Now you have college, you know, high school scouting and portal scouting. And colleges have a department in their personnel that is just for portal scouting.
So what about the kids that put themselves in the portal and they think there's going to be a market because they got recruited out of high school, but they really haven't done much in college and they find out there ain't much market value for it? Are they able to go back to that same school, or is that very difficult for them?
It's up to the school. You know, every school handles it differently. And I just happened to look at what last year's portal was that's still in there. There's 2,066 active kids in the portal from last year's recruiting class, and that's Division I football.
So you're saying most of them returned to their original school?
Well, if the coaches let them. But these kids are just sitting there without either the school has allowed them to stay in the portal and at the school, which is kind of hard to believe.
Yeah.
And so, you know, where are all these kids going if they're still sitting in the last year's portal as active?
Well, that's what I'm wondering. Are there a bunch of kids that just aren't playing now?
Have to be. I don't know where they are.
I mean, you have to really cross-reference all the rosters, but, I mean, that's a pretty tough pill to swallow. That isn't what you were thinking when you went in the portal, right?
Yeah, exactly right. And that's the problem. And then you go in and you say, I'm a college coach, and it's kind of like, you know, you go to a JC for a reason. Well, you go to the portal for a reason.
Yeah.
You know?
And sometimes it's a good reason. You know, coaching change, philosophy change, and it makes all the sense in the world. But sometimes you might be a step slow, and you just don't want to admit it. Can you stay on with us for a quick break? Because I haven't even gotten to the Gophers class yet.
You got it, man. I'm with you.
Randy Teeler is our guest, breaking down tomorrow's signing day and a whole bunch more as you can pick up on interesting stuff in college football when we come back. Boom, 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 boom. Welcome back. Randy Teeler, our guest tomorrow, signing day for college football. Gophers got 19 commitments, and Randy... I was out with Chase Carter today. He's going to Michigan State. His father played basketball at the University of Minnesota, Randy. And he's a pretty good one. We got a tight end from Lakeville North. The Rambos could go into Nebraska. So Minnesota certainly didn't get them all in this state. Generally, they don't. But can you tell? Can you get a feel? I don't know how many stars you put next to him, but what do you see?
Well, I think the on the recruiting class, let me do this. Let me back up 1 second because – on the portal stuff. Because I work with a group called National Preps, and I think this is important. So colleges pay us to scout high school players for them.
Yep.
And so what we've noticed is there are some schools who don't use our service as much because they've decided the portal is more important.
Colleges, you mean, because they said we're not going to spend as much time on it.
Right. So I'm in a company that's scouting high school players, and some schools don't really need that as much as they used to because, and this is kind of the question about how it affects the high schools, because they're not recruiting high schools as much.
So these signing days are really hard to grade.
No question.
What do you think of what you see from Minnesota?
Well, what I like about Minnesota, and again, so right now they have 19 what is called hard commits. We'll see how many they sign tomorrow. But what they don't know is how many kids are going to leave and what their 85 number is going to look like.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
So total of 85, scholarship, yep.
Yeah, and so that's the hard thing. But as far as this group, this 19, I like it because I think they do a great job of identifying players that fit needs. You know, they have Minnesota recruits really for length and room to grow and upside. Size and length are really that stand out in this group. You know, like the defensive linemen, these four kids, I love them because it's such an upside to all of them. And they do a great job, like the Smith and Bixby and those, you know, they're all kids, Schwartz, they're all kids that are going to get bigger, stronger, faster. And then, you know, the wrestler, Pyburn from Jacksonville, I mean, those are good football players that are going to get, that can do a lot and are going to get better, you know?
You know, the Bixby kid had a strange a chain of events. He was in Ohio, and he decided since he was going to come to school in Minnesota, he might as well move to Minnesota and get closer to the campus. So he moved to Eden Prairie, of course, a perennial power,
right,
and played for Mike Grant for a year. And he barely played. He played a first game and got hurt. And then he had some medical issues in between, and then came back at the end of the year and played. And I'm looking at that going, you know, and now just take me in, and I'm not saying him specifically, because I don't know how he grades out in the University of Minnesota's mind. But if you get kind of a smattering, but you can't really tell what level the kid plays at because of what happened to him this year, do they ever say, you know what, we're backing off. We think you'd be better off going somewhere else. Or once you lock into a kid with a verbal, is it pretty much written in stone?
Well, it's hard to back out of a commitment because of all of the ramifications, especially if you back out of a kid at Eden Prairie. And you know,
there's a lot of ramifications there. He's going down the road. Yep.
Coach Grant may not like that.
Yeah.
Next year, and so. But there are teams that do it. You know, there's certain teams that offer everybody, and they then just slow play the guy or kind of drop him off the list. And even if they've committed, there's a thing now called uncommittable commits.
And that means what?
Which I don't know what it means, or unsignable commits. You know, so there's terminology now that is basically the word commitment didn't mean anything anyway, and now there's uncommittable commitments and unsignable commitments, and so we're all trying to figure all that stuff out. But going back, I like this class. I think Coach Fleck and Coach Callahan, those guys I've known for a long time. I like the quarterback in this group.
That Knuth kid from South Dakota, he looked good to you?
Yeah, I love him. He kind of is a, maybe it's just because it's South Dakota, but he's kind of a Carson Wentz-ish kind of guy. Good size, mobile, good tough arm strength, all those good things that, you know, not much wasted motion. He's a talented guy. So I think they did a heck of a job with this group. And a lot of them from out of state. And I don't know if this is a normal thing, but I don't know what they have from in-state. Just five from Minnesota out of the 19, which is scary up until they sign tomorrow.
Yeah, up until they sign tomorrow. But, you know, I just can't see why, and take me back here again, these Power 5 conferences, isn't it incredibly easy for an SEC team, a Big Ten team, USC, whatever it is, to even send out the overtures to the kid that's a really good player at Bowling Green or wherever it is and say, look, man, we really like you. I'm not telling you to go in the transfer portal. I'm just telling you, if you do, there's probably be a spot for you here.
Yeah, well, absolutely. That's why I said the somebody on the at USC is watching all of the players at every other school. Especially those kids that are backups, or they have, they think they may be ready for the portal, and then so they're keeping an eye on them and have a board, just like the NFL does, with those kids rated. Okay, here's the top five wide receivers. If we're going to go portal, these are the guys we would like to see in the portal, and then they have to decide how. What the rules are and how much they're willing to break them, if at all. A lot of schools won't. You know, I mean,
yep.
Most schools won't. It's a pretty clean business, but it sure makes it less clean with the NIL and some of that other stuff.
Yeah, and I mean, if I'm sitting at Bowling Green and I don't know it, I mean, I want to know that Alabama thinks I can play for them or fill a void. Now, if you're an SEC or the flip side of that, if you're in a conference, a Power 5 conference, and you go, I want to go to the portal, and you're from, you know, a pretty good program. Now, let's just say you haven't seen the field, but you've been on that roster. Is it almost automatic that you're going to get a scholarship somewhere because of that name?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's so then the research has to be done by the school that's looking at, like Mississippi had a bunch recent, a couple D linemen and some other kids, and I noticed that Coach Kiffin's not very happy about it, and he's saying the NIL is kind of, you know, kids go to the highest bidder now when they leave Ole Miss, you know. And so...
Oops. Hey, you know what, Randy? I'm sorry. I was so involved in this, I went too long, so I'm going to let you go. I'm going to promise we'll talk again soon, but thank you so much.
You got it, brother, anytime.
Randy Taylor, clarification too. Gary Trent played in the NBA. His son plays in the NBA. Let's talk to him about the NBA because he knows a lot about what? The NBA, next.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
At Lowe's, this Veterans Day and every day, verified military members, veterans, and their spouses get automatic silver status in MyLowe's Rewards with free standard shipping, plus 10% off eligible purchases with no annual limit. It's one way we honor and give back to those who have served and still do. Learn more now at Lowe's.com/military. 10% discount can't be combined with another offer. Exclusions, terms, and conditions apply. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at Lowe's.com/terms. Subject to change.
Once upon a dismal day, Bob's ice cream van looked gloomy and gray. Although he had big ambitions, his socials lacked creative vision.
That bad?
Maybe vamp it up a tad?
I have an idea.
Bob launched Canva and got into gear.
Create the video in the vampire theme and make it the funniest meme.
It went viral. Bob's business, a revival. Now, imagine what your dreams can become when you put imagination to work at Canva.com.
Whatever happens today, take it on with a fresh cup of True Brew coffee. Now only $1 with True Rewards. True North Store's True Brew Coffee is a hot, flavorful gourmet blend created from coffee beans from around the world. As a free True Rewards member, pick the size that is perfect for you and pay only $1. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.